It's the 10th anniversary of the American Journal of Bioethics. 10 years of articles and online interaction that has engaged everyone from bioethicists to politicians to researchers and people from all walks of life. Joining us on the Bioethics Channel are Dr. Glenn McGee, Editor-in-Chief, and Dr. Summer Johnson, Executive Editor of the American Journal of Bioethics. First off, congratulations. 10 years for any publication is quite a milestone. Now, as the idea of a job came to be, Glenn, what were your initial thoughts? What were your goals for what you had in mind for this publication?
I was about 29 years old when Massachusetts Institute of Technology's University Press made a phone call to me, prompted by a philosopher who was working in an area most folks would say four people read about, but who is nonetheless incredibly committed to bioethics and had published at MIT for years. MIT said, you know, we're wondering about this field of bioethics. Seems to be cutting edge. Lots of people are getting into it. Is there anything that we could do? I put together a slideshow for them and flew up to Cambridge to their very intimidating offices, talked to their...
Did you have PowerPoint back then?
I had PowerPoint.
Oh, amazing. Okay.
Back then we were proud of that, even some animation. And I basically said to them, MIT is in a fabulous position to create a book series because the books in bioethics are largely read by academics, and that really troubled me. And as for a journal, which it was mentioned in the discussions to get me to come up there, there are a lot of journals in bioethics, and the last thing in the world this field needs is another one. At the time, I think there were 21 journals that were published on a regular basis in the field. And moreover, I said, you know, I don't have any time for anything like that. So we charged forward for a year or so with the book series, now in its 27th volume called Basic Bioethics. But within about a year, they came back again, and my colleague at Penn at the time, David Magnus, and I had had a conversation over too much coffee about what was wrong with the literature in bioethics, and essentially concluded that while there's beautiful writing and extraordinary scholarship in bioethics, that even as far along as 1998, 99, there still weren't any bioethics journals that reached judges and doctors and patients. And I could go on and on, but I'd always be listing in this list everybody who wasn't a professional bioethicist, which is to say a group of 2,000 or 3,000 people might very well read some fraction of these journals, but not even most medical schools got them. And more importantly, you couldn't be assured that a story in bioethics would be read by the people who are working on the issue itself. And that just bugged the heck out of us. So we kind of brainstormed, and David mentioned that there was a journal at the time called Brain and Behavioral Sciences. That journal is built around this idea that you'd get people and nominate them as qualified to comment on very prominent articles. Everything would be peer-reviewed, but these so-called open peer commentaries, solicited and then chosen, would be published together with a kind of primary article. So we invented a format called contemporaneous commentary. We built a journal that allowed that to happen. Over the years, we've gone from 100 or so open peer commentators to now, what, in the tens of thousands, who have nominated each other. And that critical feature of this, that these folks come from everywhere, from offices in Congress to judges to, you know, leading scientists to bioethicists, kind of got us launched. The idea, the dream of it, I think has now, 10 years in, probably come true.
So, Summer, it sounds like it was something where it was a new model, a fresh model of being able to put something together with open peer commentaries and then taking advantage of the new technology that presented itself as opportunities for a job to grow.
Absolutely. And I just want to say, as the executive editor, that I really want to thank Dr. Magnus and Glenn for being able to create a system that requires us on a monthly basis to have to herd approximately 35 to 40 different faculty members to get those commentaries submitted. It's a real joy to have to every month to get all these academics and judges and everyone. But in all seriousness, it really is a joy to put together such fascinating content. And it really is a credit to our publisher, Taylor and Francis, for putting together a system. We really are unique in our publisher to have this technology, and it has presented some challenges and also some real opportunities to be able to use a system like this. And it really does create for us the ability to do things that in the world, not just of bioethics, but I think in medicine, is unique, to be able to do real-time interaction with authors that I really value. So all joking aside, while sometimes it is very difficult to get everybody on board at any given issue, it is really, I think, credit to the founders of this journal that we have been able to sustain this format, because over the years it has really been the thing that has, I think, encouraged people to continue submitting to AJOB.
Glenn, what has surprised you over the years with the journal in terms of content, reaction to content? What surprised you?
A lot of things. Early on, and it's important in this regard to credit not only David Magnus, but also Paul Root Wolpe, who were the associate editors for me when the journal started, and who played an enormous role and continue to in essentially reading zillions and zillions of pages. First piece here, I was really surprised that the folks who contributed early on were willing to contribute at all. This thing could have tanked quickly. It's a tribute to the fact that so many people believe in the notion that public bioethics is real, that the distinction between the amateur and the professional is not something that's pejorative toward the amateur, that in fact what we, you know, bioethicists might call amateur is what really matters a lot of the time, if not all the time, and that it doesn't get in the way of rigorous scholarship. I've been surprised in some negative ways as well. Across the years, we've had a number of different institutional homes and so on, and ups and downs in terms of the financial support of the journal. And we've taken a lot of hits. People have said, among other things, that the journal has had a conflict of interest in various cases. So we were the first journal to adopt a conflict of interest policy among bioethics journals, which a lot of people don't realize, because we are an ethics journal.
So Summer, the article on the ethics of pharmaceutical industry gift giving, that was one of the important stories. What in your mind were the important stories, important articles of AJOB over the last 10 years?
Well, in coming up with what to do for the 10th anniversary issue, we spent a lot of time thinking about how should we design this issue and what were the stories we wanted to tell. And ultimately, we decided that the way we wanted to go was to pick a number of articles that we wanted to republish and to focus on the highlights of the last 10 years. So the most cited AJOB article, which was an article written by Kaplan and Mers about the ethics of giving small gifts by the pharmaceutical industry. Beyond that, we actually focused on three other articles, one of which was what we called our most controversial article, which was an article written by Rosamond Rhodes called Rethinking Research Ethics. We also published another article, which we called our most prescient article, which was published by Paul Wolpe and his colleagues on the ethics of the use of fMRI for mind reading and for detecting lies and other uses, and particularly because of that article was published in 2005, just right before and as neuroscience was coming into the fore, as a neuroethics was really coming into being a hot subfield for the field of bioethics. And lastly, I think we also wanted to highlight the fact that AJOB has had a huge impact on public policy. And so we decided to republish an article by Skip Nelson and others on the polyheme controversy. And so in republishing these articles, we just didn't want to obviously republish them because we would hope that most people in the field of bioethics and others would have seen these articles before. But in fact, to then accompany them with commentaries from
up-to-date commentary.
That's right. Commentary from people who are public intellectuals and who would have some perspective on what did this article really mean, not just for the field of bioethics, but for the country. And so in each case, we chose someone who either was impacted by that article or who had some role as that article came out, and to do a kind of retrospective 5 or 6 or in some cases almost 10 years later as to what did that article mean and what has it meant since it had been published in AJOB. And so that really was what we wanted to do in terms of this issue, was really to give people a sense of, in these last 10 years, what has AJOB done, and to give some perspective from some people who we really thought would know as to what difference has AJOB made from their perspective and also from our own, as to where we've been and also a little bit as to where we are going.
I thought it was interesting that as I was listening to you, Summer, and I was the high-impact articles were on topics that people on the street could understand. Everybody has gone into a doctor's office and seen gifts from pharmaceutical companies, the polyheme issue, the issue about artificial blood being used instead of regular blood in emergency situations or whatever. Those are things that people can understand.
Absolutely. And that is really, I think, one of the biggest successes of AJOB, is that this journal really has, throughout the years, focused on issues that are not esoteric. They really are the issues that you have seen in the headlines, in part, I think, because of AJOB, but because we really have made an effort to write about the things that are relevant to broader society. And that's in part because we've wanted to have an impact. That is a tribute to our editors and to the people who have written an AJOB, and I think that that's something that we will have a commitment to continuing to do in the future.
Okay, crystal ball time, guys. 10 years from now, it'll be 2020. Maybe you'll be sitting at a table much like this one, across from an inquisitive guy like me doing a podcast, whatever the technology is at the time in 2020. What kind of stories will you be talking about 20 years from now that will have been covered in some way or addressed in some way by the American Journal of Bioethics?
Well, you're making an assumption that I'd like to make too, which is that bioethics will exist in 10 years. It is increasingly the case that bioethics material is written by non-bioethicists. Some of the most important books that have come out in the last 3 months, because they all show up on our desks for potential review, have been written by astonishingly thoughtful scientists, science writers, and more generally essayists from around the country. David Schenck on Alzheimer's, Carl Zimmer writing about a variety of different issues in the area, Chris Mooney writing about everything from, you know, health and science reform to the state of evolution. I actually have noticed, too, alongside that, that one of the big changes in bioethics has been the degree to which, if you watch the media cycle, that you know, for example, 3, 4, 5 years ago when we published the article about the transplant of a face, it led media. And so literally nobody knew about the face transplant story in the United States until we ran the ethics article. And then we were bombarded, overwhelmed. I mean, the story was every newspaper in the United States ran something. And it was an interesting moment for us because it was a model, an experiment for what I think could happen in 20 years. And I think that model is the model that will keep bioethics alive if it is kept alive. But what I'm seeing at the moment and have been seeing in the subsequent, in the 5 years subsequent to the publication of that article, is a shorter and shorter cycle in which the media and others turn to experts in bioethics. Because ultimately bioethics is no longer, I think it's changed a lot in the last 20 years or even 40 years. There's much less speculating about the meaning of human nature, even less discussion about, you know, sort of this is right or this is wrong from my point of view, and more research, empirical research, et cetera, which we could talk about in terms of how we've embraced that at AJOB. But the news cycle is getting shorter in asking bioethicists, and now media members have begun to sort of declare themselves bioethicists. So pretty quickly a debate about, for example, stem cells – which you'd never think someone from a major news program would bring on. The ethics stuff is actually discussed by the journalists. I think that reflects a real threat to thoughtful bioethics. If I were looking 10 years out, well, I think it will always be the case that the Senate Appropriations Committee on Health and the various committees of the Senate and House and the UN will always form commissions that will always have inquiries about breaking new technologies. I think we're in a way reverting to a place where either ethicists are going to have to get on the train about the importance of speaking to the people in a way that is comprehensible, or bioethics will not have a long life. I don't want that to happen. A job needs to be a place where you would be as likely to get as large an audience as you would have if you published the same piece in New England Journal, and I believe it is now the case. But crystal balling it about a journal or a field or about issues is tough here because we have entered a world where bioethics has outstripped its own capacity. We used to say, well, the reason we need bioethics is because, you know, we can't catch up with the moral issues caused by the technology we create. I think we finally entered a world in which bioethics can't catch up with the moral issues that are created by the science that we create, and that the field of bioethics, as it were, has gotten stuck in, let's call them, three or four different areas of inquiry where they are unable, because of that kind of institutionalized myopia, to capture the things that come flying by. I think it's important that the journal recognize that in part it's our role to shove questions like community consultation down the throats of those who don't want to hear it, to push issues that are real. So I think it's in part our job not just to look at the crystal ball and find the issues, but to find the issues and then insist that people think about them.
Dr. Glenn McGee is editor-in-chief. Dr. Summer Johnson is executive editor. Celebrating 10 years with the October issue, the October 2010 issue of the American Journal of Bioethics. For more information, visit bioethics.net. That's bioethics.net. I'm Laurel LeBoux. Thanks for listening to the Bioethics Channel.